11 of season 12 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 movie The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week is Lisa Leahy, a podcaster who's currently on sabbatical from doing podcasts. So welcome back to the show, Lisa.
Thank you for having me despite my sabbatical. I feel like that might disqualify me from being a guest on other people's podcasts, but
no, that's fine. I'm glad I'm able to get you out of your cave.
You know. Absolutely. It's hard to get me out of the cave. It's warm and I don't like warm weather. So, you know, I hibernate quite a bit this time of year.
Okay, but you know, when you see the Shawshank shadow, you come out, I guess.
Absolutely, I do. I emerge for some Morgan Freeman and Thomas Newman scores. Absolutely.
Perfect. All right. So minute 11 begins with Red picking up speed and ends with Haywood having what to say. So Lisa, what is your background with the Shawshank Redemption? Because I know you, what is your background with Rita Hayworth in The Shawshank Redemption?
Yes. So I did see the movie first. I did not see it in the theater.
Blasphemy.
I know, right? especially for someone like me, because, Well, I mean, when it came out, I was in 10th grade. So,
excuse.
I know. Well, I mean,
you weren't reading in 10th grade? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, no, I was. No, the problem was I was in classes that, you know, told you, here's what you're going to read. And it was usually very boring, old and dusties. I still have some PTSD from my summer reading going into my 10th grade year, where I was told we had to read 3 books over the summer. We had to read To Kill a Mockingbird, which I liked. We had to read I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings, which I loved. And I had to read The Awakening by Kate Chopin, which I still to this day hate. Being a good little nerd, though, I absolutely read all 3 of them. And I remember sitting on my floor in my bedroom trying to get through the end of The Awakening. And it was just like, oh, make this book end. But anyway, yeah, so I had not read this. I don't know why.
Were you a Stephen King fan at the time or not yet?
Absolutely. No, I definitely was. Because my first Stephen King novel was Carrie when I was in junior high. So I was definitely reading Stephen King. And when I got to high school and was dealing with reading these old and dusties for my required summer reading, I remember going to Borders bookstore, rest its soul, and being annoyed because, even to this day, I love going to a bookstore and looking at the summer reading table to see like what people are being told to read. And when I went to pick up the books that I was required to read, I noticed that there were Stephen King books in there and there were like contemporary fiction books in there. And I'm like, why don't I get to read those? It's like, I have to read this stuff that I don't like, but there are books that I read for fun over here. And I do remember specifically seeing Stephen King books there, but this one, it's probably because my mom didn't have it. And there are so many of his books to go through that it just didn't occur to me that like, hey, this particular book I hadn't read. And like I said, I have no memory of this movie being in the theater. So it just kind of got by me for whatever reason.
It didn't really do that well in the theater. So it's sort of understandable.
True. It was also a rated R movie. My first rated R movie was around that time. It was Interview with the Vampire. But this wasn't on my radar. So I would have seen this, you know, in the days of TNT and TBS and getting Shawshanked. And, you know, it's on a weekend. And when it's on, you leave it on. So I probably caught it there somewhere. But, you know, obviously moving forward, I have since read it. I actually taught it for a number of years to high school juniors. I asked, you know, my department chair to get me some copies of it for, you know, a class set. And we read it and watched it for a while. And then when I stopped teaching juniors, you know, things kind of move along. Eventually, I had a film elective and I used to show this and teach this for cinematography.
Were you allowed to show a rated R movie?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So especially because it was like juniors and seniors. And, you know, you send home the paper that says, here's what I'm showing. You know, here's why it's rated R. And if you don't want your child seeing this movie, please let me know.
And were there parents who would who would say, I don't want my kids seeing it?
The only time I ever had kids not watch something were students who were Mormon, who don't watch rated R films at all. And so they would always excuse themselves. Now, those kids weren't in my film class. Those were kids in like my English class. So when I would show Memento or Apocalypse Now, those kids would excuse themselves. But no, I don't think I've ever had a kid say, no, I don't want to watch this. I did have a student who, when we were watching this, tragically, she had lost her father to suicide. And I gave her a very clear heads up when Brooks was coming. And so she excused herself from that period, so she didn't have to see it. But other than that, I've never had a student not watch this movie.
Okay, very cool. Were there students who didn't like it?
Never. Not once. And I say that to them all the time. I talk about how this is number one on the IMDb top 50, how this has never moved since it got up there. And how it's been, you know, what, decades since it moved. And I said, you know, I dare you, find me someone who doesn't like this movie. The sociology classes in my building are watching this right now. I know Law and Society watched this earlier in the year. I mean, it is a spectacular film. And I don't know anybody who dislikes this movie. I've never encountered someone who dislikes it. I don't know how you could.
Okay, I'm doing this in a minute, so I don't fit into that category. I have talked in the past, you know, especially during the first week, that I have a friend who refuses to watch the movie because he said that there's so much hype that it's never going to be able to live up to the hype of what he's heard. So he's just never watched it. And I keep telling him, yeah, Josh, go watch it.
There's gonna be a day when he finally does. I get it. I understand that fear because nobody wants to watch a movie that's gonna disappoint you. But there is really something cool to getting to watch something for the very first time that is guaranteed to be incredible. Yeah. And you don't get that experience. Like, that doesn't happen. So to have a movie that you can say, I promise you, you will love this, is just it's a rare gift. Right. Movie fans.
Completely agree with you on that. Okay. So and when did you eventually read the book?
Oh, I have absolutely no idea. I don't know. I really don't remember because it was probably around the time Apt Pupil got released. Because you've got Rita Hayworth in The Shawshank Redemption, The Body, and Apt Pupil all That's in the right. same
collection. Not in that order, seasons. But yes.
No, but that's probably when I finally was like, let me get my hands on this because, oh, I can read Shawshank and, oh, I can finally read, you know, The Body, you know, I can read Stand By Me finally, because I hadn't read that either at the time. So it probably was right around the time Apt Pupil was being okay. released.
I think that came out in like 98, 97, 98, something like that.
Yep. I was working at Blockbuster when it came out on video.
I gotta say, that one of the three, that's the one which they didn't do such a great job adapting it, and I like the book better than the movie.
I agree. I mean, I usually like the book better than the movie. Shawshank is one of those examples where it's on par with the book for me.
Same thing for me for both Shawshank and The Body, because it's almost word for word.
Yeah. Yep. And I mean, Ian McKellen in Apt Pupil, I mean, he does a fantastic job. So I think I was enjoying it more because of
okay.
him.
Okay. I can understand that. I mean, I didn't, let's put it this way. One of the things I love about Apt Pupil is the Shawshank reference in the middle, which is.
Oh yeah. That's a King thing though. You know that.
Of course it is. You know, that I know.
I loved it. It's funny too, because I have so fallen off reading King. I feel like ashamed to even say it. But yeah, that used to be a big delight to get to see all the Easter eggs and pull those up and That's watch right. those. So,
you know, and like, oh, this takes place in Castle Rock. Oh, what happened in Castle Rock? What's,
Yep. I remember reading 11/22/63 for the first time. And when he ever mentioned, you know, going down to the Barrens and seeing a couple of kids, and I'm like, give me a beep, okay. beep, Richie, and I'll be happy. Exactly. And there it was. And I was like, yes. It was almost like a drinking game. I'm like, come on.
I
yes!
actually love that book, and I hated the adaptation.
I can't remember if I finished it. I don't like James Franco, so no, that made a big dent
everything.
In that show
they
for me.
They changed it too much, you know, which is why I didn't
believe
like
it. I'm not a history person, so I was kind of like reading it more out of obligation than out of
Okay, well,
enjoyment,
I'm a history
unfortunately.
person, especially when it comes to JFK and conspiracies and stuff like that. I love reading that stuff.
Oh,
You know, so
absolutely then.
you know that's what I mean. That's a long book, and I gobbled it up. And I'm not I'm not in general a fast reader, you know. But sometimes there's just books you just can't put down.
Yeah. I'm not a fast reader either. I just kind of take my time and do my thing. But, you know, with a kitten squisher like that, you definitely need a few fluff books afterwards because it takes a lot to commit to Stephen King.
That's true. That's true. I still remember, what was it, like in 94, 95, when I first read The Stand, and like also I couldn't put it down, you know. And again, that's like 1,000 pages or something like that. I don't remember exactly how many. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but whatever.
I mean, I hate to say it because I don't want to be that person, but I miss the writing of the days when Stephen King was on drugs and alcohol because that's the stuff I like best.
I
But I
agree.
definitely don't wish ill on the
No,
man.
not at all. I don't wish ill on him, but you know, and I've even been in front of his house.
Me too. My husband took me on a there was a tour that they do up there. I
I
guess there's a
didn't get a
couple of
tour. I didn't
tours,
get a
but
tour. My brother, who was living in Bangor at the time, just took me, and we stood by the fence, you know, looking at the crazy tree that he has out there, waiting for, you know, hoping that Stephen King would poke his head out and say, "Get off my lawn," you know, something like that.
Yes. We had there was a tour. There was a guy who's got like a 6-7 passenger van. And he apparently like knows the Kings and was friendly with them. And he was kind of like the only like valid one, the one that they had like endorsed, I guess. And it was great because it was a very small group of us. And he was a driving tour. He took us around to all the different locations in Bangor and showed us. And I'm sitting there with my little notebook and he was you know, asking little trivia questions, and I was the big nerd. You know, my husband's a Stephen King fan the way I am. We've got a one bookshelf in our office with like nothing but both of our Stephen King books. And there was somebody else who was a fan too, but like there's me, and then there was like other people somewhere down here. And I remember going to the house and thinking like simultaneously, I do want him to come out, but I don't want him to come out because if he comes out, I may keel over dead on the sidewalk. So Stephen King and Bill Murray share a birthday, and those two men are the two individuals that if I ever encountered them in person, I would become a blathering idiot. I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
Okay. Make sense.
So,
Makes sense.
lot of episode content on me today.
Why not? Why not? You know, isn't that what this is all about? I mean, we got to talk about the
Yeah,
history.
they're
We got
totally here to listen to
to. No,
me, not to hear about a movie.
well, we want to hear your take on, you know, the history of the movie and things like that. So that makes sense. You know,
I appreciate it.
even when you're on sabbatical, you can talk about these things.
I can Oh, please. This is what I do every day in school, so.
There you go. So we left things off yesterday with Red walking through the yard, as we hear the klaxon blaring and the siren, you know, where you know, all the men are starting to gather around, and Red starts walking towards. You see, I always thought he was walking towards like a set of bleachers or something like that, but it's just I don't even know what it is, because it doesn't make any sense what he's climbing up, because you can't see it, you know. But he
Yeah, it's part of there's like a lip on the wall.
exactly.
They're like hanging up on the part of the wall of that old beautiful Gothic
That's right.
building.
But he like starts trotting, and then you see him get elevated by as if he's going up steps or something like that. But then, like you said, it doesn't really make sense of what it is. You know, maybe later in the movie we'll get a better shot of it, because here it doesn't show us the ground. It just shows the, you know, all the characters sitting around. And well, later this week we'll find out what exactly they're doing by you know, when they're lounging around here. But you know, Red apparently finds his place on this you know, on this ledge, I guess. And we see that Floyd's there, and all Red's compatriots start showing up. You know, we
The
that's right.
cronies.
That's right. I love all these cronies. It's great, because you know, most of these guys are recognizable from other movies, but you don't really know. I mean, they're all character actors, but you don't really know who they are. And just when I started doing research here, I found out their names. You know, like one's called Skeet, another called Jigger, Floyd, I knew, Snooze, and Ernie. And then you get Haywood also.
Yep.
So it's just really interesting that this is his posse.
Yeah. And I mean, you get that. I mean, it's a really cool introduction to him, because you've got all of these guys that you see, like you see all of these other men running, you know, to the left of the screen. And Red is going upstream, right? Like, he's going in the opposite direction. And so at first you wonder, like, where the hell's this dude going? Like, he's clearly going the wrong way. And then you notice that he kind of is elevated, you know, like you get that great low angle with the camera, and you've got the fact that these guys, not only are they physically elevated, like you said, but they're also, you know, the camera is lower than them. So this first introduction, not to mention, let's go with the time period for a minute, but a black man in this prison to be elevated, to be up that high, to have a certain status, like, this is a special dude.
Yeah.
Right. And you know that very early on.
And it feels like he's like king of the hill type of thing.
Yeah. That's a great sentence here. That really is what he is. Not to mention, he's taller than all these other guys. Like,
no, I think Floyd, he literally is a little taller, but
he's not on the same level as Red. Right. Like, when you look at them all together, Red is still the one who's highest.
That's true. I mean, you know that Red was originally not meant to be a black character. You know, in the novel.
No.
In the novel, he's Irish. You know.
Yeah. Well, and that's what makes that line so funny in the film. You know, when you eventually get there.
They originally wanted Redford to play this character, which would have been very interesting.
Yeah.
If they had gotten him.
I agree.
No question about that.
He could have done it. He could have done it well. I mean, you've got somebody like Jack Nicholson, too, who played Randall Patrick McMurphy in Cuckoo's Nest, who is also like a very Irish character, like very red-haired, very loud, very brash, very blue-collar, who Red is essentially the same kind of dude.
Correct. No, but I think they made the right choice with Morgan Freeman there. No.
Oh, God. How do you say? Find me somebody who dislikes this movie, and find me somebody who says Morgan Freeman wasn't cast well.
No, because we're talking about Robert Redford. You know, like, maybe you'd say, Robert Redford might have been a better Red than Morgan Freeman. That's what it comes down to.
No,
of course not. I'm aware of that. That's my point. And I just find it funny that we find out now that Eddie is one of the gang, when, just, you know, we talked about this last week, that, you know, he was, Red was upset with Eddie because Eddie owes him, money or cigarettes or whatever it is. Cigarettes. No, I know, but I'm saying he owes him some sort of commodity, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, because when you see him, when we saw him last week, it doesn't seem as if he's part of the posse. You know, he seems like some extraneous guy that's coming over and saying, come on, give me another pack. Give me a pack. I want to use it. And it's like, no, you know, you already owe me five. And he's like, no, it's only four. And he goes, no, it's five. He goes, all right, it's fine. You know, that type of thing.
He's got his notebook. Don't cross Red. He knows. And that's the other thing. You come into this film and you expect somebody like Red to be a real hard ass, because usually that guy in the prison is a real hard ass. Can I say that on this podcast? Is that too much of a strong word?
You can say whatever the hell you want.
Don't give me that kind of freedom.
So, Lisa, let's put it this way. The people who are listening to this are hopefully at least juniors and seniors. How's that?
That's good.
Do
That's
you swear
good.
In class?
No.
Oh, okay.
Never. Not once. No, never do I ever say that I, you know, for my 2 degrees in English, that I have 2 degrees in bullshit.
That's fine.
Never.
Do the parents have to sign, you know, permission slips for that too?
To hear me talk in class? Good Lord, can you imagine?
Oh. Well, come on, you are teacher of the year from Rhode Island from 4 years ago. So
2023.
Three years ago. Three.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah, you messed up our recording schedule that summer, but that's okay. That's okay.
Sorry.
I forgive you. I forgive you. All right. So these guys are all standing there. They're starting to get into order. And then we hear a lot of whistling and cheering and men shouting. And you know, at this point we see the bus again, and the gate is starting to open up with the bus. And it's a great shot from inside of the bus out, and we see Hadley
absolutely.
In front of him, you know, with you know, two guards on each side of him, and he's slowly, you know, giving hand signals to the driver to keep moving. And then it's very interesting. The shot changes, and we see two guards come out of the tower on top with machine guns. Well, one of them has a machine gun, and one of them has a shotgun, you know, taking up position. It's like, are they really expecting somebody at this point to make a run for it, or try to I don't know, someone in the yard doing something? It's interesting the way that they show us that these guards get into position here.
Yeah, it's a very strong introduction to this area, to this situation, to how this works. I mean, it's kind of an odd juxtaposition, because you've got all of these inmates cheering.
That's right.
Like there's a celebrity coming, versus the guards who are like, we need to make sure that we're ready to shoot.
That's
in
right.
case somebody makes
But again,
run
if you have a Tommy gun and you're shooting into a crowd, you're going to do more damage. You're not going to be able to get the one guy who's causing problems.
I don't expect they care. I got to say, I don't think they'd be too sad about a couple of stray bullets and a couple of deaths to collateral damage here. Yeah, I don't think they would care. But it's interesting, because you have this moment of claustrophobia. Not this moment. There's a lot of it's interesting, like the way they set up this sequence with this giant opening space. You know, last week you talk about like the aerial camera view and how you've got this beautiful Gothic architecture and this incredible old building. But at the same time, like this is a place where you will be contained for the rest of your life in a very small space. And here, like inside the bus, you know, you've got these oblique angles where you've got the shadow of the bus driver. You've got the view through the windshield, very tight quarters, like you're chained in, we know that. And then when they come out and you've got the two guards coming down from the tower, even the little driveway is contained. You know, it you don't think outside equals claustrophobic, but this does, because not only is the gateway here, the driveway, contained,
right.
It's a dead end. You know, like there is one way in.
Right.
There is not a way out. You know, and it's really interesting the way this sequence really sets up, like this is the end of the road.
Yeah, and again,
in
we'll
a number
talk more
of
about
different
this
ways.
During the course of the week, but it's all psychological warfare against the prisoners, you know, for them showing up. And, you know, the way they set this up is definitely a power play from that position, you know. And also the idea that you're bringing in these new prisoners, and all the old prisoners are just hanging around watching this. You know?
Yeah, and they're cheering for
well,
it. It's like, what?
They're sort of cheering. You know, we'll find out during the course of the week what they're really doing. But, you know,
this
is a form of entertainment for them. Let's put it that way. And the fact that they allow this to take place is also very interesting. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, the door stops right in front of Hadley, and we see Hadley outside, and then the shot changes, and then, you know, we see Hadley from inside out, and then the shot changes, and we're outside.
Yep. And again,
exactly. Showing that
there's a gun right there.
And
yep.
then Hadley opens the latch on the door and opens up the door. And he steps back a little bit, and the guard with the shotgun gets out, and then one of the prisoners comes out, and he grabs him, and he goes, "You speak English, butt steak." He points to one of the other guys. "You follow this officer."
Yep. And they all kind of come off
now,
the bus.
Have you ever heard the phrase butt steak before?
No, that's not even one Beavis and Butthead have used.
That is true. That is true. Now, do you know what a butt steak is?
I don't. Is it stick or steak?
Steak. Butt steak. Sorry.
Is it like EAK or AKE?
No. EAK.
Okay. Nope. I mean, I expected some kind of poor quality meat.
It's the beef top sirloin, and it's cut from the top of the I guess the rear end of either.
Well, that's not poor quality then. It's not high quality, but it's not garbage.
Right. Right. Apparently, it's it offers excellent value and great beefy flavor.
That is a weird word to use here, then.
Yes.
Well, it shows that Hadley doesn't know what he's talking about.
That's right.
To get all English teachery on this.
So
I can make anything mean something.
That's true. So it's a cut that is moderately tender, but very flavorful. You know, a lot of people either grill it whole. You can slice it for stir fry or cut into kebabs, things like that. It's also a slang term, surprisingly, right? And it's
not one that you hear too often.
Nope, not too well. It's either a veiled insult, prison jargon.
I don't know that it's like, veiled.
Right? It's basically calling someone an ass. You know, mm-hmm. You call them a butt steak instead. So it's instead of calling someone an ass or a jerk, and it's mm-hmm. a way of doing it without using profanity, which again. Maybe this is Hadley's nice way of introducing somebody and not necessarily, using his very colorful vocabulary, which we will see
throughout
the course of the movie. Who knows?
It is rated R.
Yes, that is. And it's... obviously this movie makes it it's well known for this movie, and the idea is basically it's a way of looking at people that are possibly weak targets for harassment mm-hmm. or generally pathetic. So that makes sense that Hadley would use that phrase that way.
Yep. Definitely.
Because he's basically insulting them without them necessarily realizing that they're being insulted the same way.
Again, I find that doubtful because, he's not using it as a term of endearment.
No, he's not. But the question is, these prisoners that are showing up are in complete denial as to what's going on with them.
Yes.
They're all
for their own protection.
That's right. They're all in for a major type of shock. And they don't know that. They're not sure what's really going on. And so this
they don't realize just how bad it's going to get.
Exactly. And the prisoner then shakes his head and he starts moving, and we get to see six men come out, and you see that they're all chained together. Yep. And it's interesting the way they're chained, and we will talk about this during the course of this week, that their feet are chained together. Each person's feet are chained together, and they are then from the hands chained to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And around the waist.
Right. It goes around the waist also. Exactly. And what I find really interesting is every single one of these men who comes off has is wearing a suit and a hat,
mm-hmm.
Do you think they're all coming directly from court? It's like it seems very formal. I mean, again, most of the prisoners also have hats. I think it's something, I don't think it's because of the main sun. I think it just, at the time, that was something that I guess it was a dress code requirement for this type of prison that you mostly have to have a hat on your head.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, some of the inmates don't. Maybe it's a fashion thing. I mean, who even knows? Maybe it's an extra level of protection that they think. It's interesting. I've never thought about it before.
And then the shot changes, and we're back with Red and his guys. And Haywood mm-hmm. goes, "I haven't seen such a sorry looking heap of maggot." And then he gets cut off. That's where this minute will end. So
the cut of that minute is just like, oh, yeah. Come on.
True. Again, I don't choose it. That's the way the editor cut things. What can I tell you?
Does the editor do that automatically? Like, do you set it to chop into like minute long fragments and then it just dumps out a bunch of them? How does this work?
You mean, how do I do it?
I don't know if I ever asked
how
you.
How do I do it?
Yeah, like you have all of these things broken up into literal minute videos, yeah. like individual mm-hmm. files.
Yeah,
does the editor do it automatically?
I have a program that I put in and I set how much time I want it to do, and it cuts up the file into
Thank God. Because I thought about it. I'm like, please tell me he's not doing this manually for every single minute of this movie.
And I was able to cut this one into 143 different parts, and there you go. And wherever it cuts it, I mean, it cuts at the minute mark.
So. Yeah, I love it.
Me too. Me too. All right. Is there anything else you wanted to say about this particular minute?
Only just to throw out my love for Thomas Newman and the Stoic theme. You know, it's like you get these beautiful strings playing in there. You've got that lovely bass that's still playing. I mean, this is one of my absolute favorite sequences in this film, because this is like my favorite theme on the soundtrack, and the whole thing is one of my favorite scores, period. And so I always get caught up in listening to the music behind the scene, and then I'm like, crap, rewind, let me see what they're actually saying. Right. Okay. Because I'm enjoying the strings so much. So I love Thomas Newman so much. I feel like he's sorely underrated. You know, he's working under giants like John Williams and Hans Zimmer, and you know, I think he doesn't get his due.
I totally agree. And you know, this entire season you'll be able to hear his music at the beginning and end of every single episode. So there you go.
Yay. There's
the intro and outro of them. So once again, thank you to David Brook for putting the music together for me.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. So today's segment is called Main Man Monday, where my guest will give me her top five Stephen King adaptations.
Yes.
Movie adaptations. Sorry.
Yes.
So start with your number five and work your way up. I know it was probably really, really difficult for you to narrow it down just to five.
It really was. And I got to tell you, I really don't have them ranked. But I will throw a random shout out to the miniseries Storm of the Century, which is not an adaptation. It was actually written directly to be a miniseries. And I am a fiend for all of the Stephen King miniseries films. There's huge nostalgia attached to those for me. Because, you know, in the 90s when those were playing, when those were really big, they were massive events in my house. Yeah. You know, like my mom was a big reader, and so it's like we always watch them. I own every single one of them on DVD. Wow. Like I just love these things. And so it's like you think about movies made from Stephen King's work, and I go right to that, and it's like, well, that one's not an adaptation, so never mind. I love Children of the Corn from 1984, and I don't feel embarrassed about it. I don't care how terrible it is. I think John Franklin is absolutely delightful as Isaac. And I am so entertained every time I watch that movie. I think he is amazing. I think Courtney Gaines as Malachi, as his lackey, is just incredible. And so that's always one of my favorites. You have to talk about Carrie, because that film itself is just such a brilliant piece of cinema. The performances by Sissy Spacek and Piper Laurie are off the charts. And you have that amazing, like, last gasp jump scare at the end where her hand comes out of the burial, you know, space there where the house once stood. Just an incredible film. And I don't know why they keep trying to remake and reboot this, because you will never top that film. And again, it holds a nostalgic place for me because Carrie was my first Stephen King novel.
Okay.
So, you know, I just kind of hold that one special for me. Huge, huge fan of 2007's The Mist. I think that novella is very underrated. I think it's just incredibly well done. And Marcia Gay Harden should have gotten a nomination for that. That is one of those female performance in a horror film characters that has gone unrecognized, and I don't understand why, because she is absolutely terrifying as Mrs. Carmody. It's such an incredible character focus kind of film. Like, what do people do when they're caught in this terrible situation? It's not even about what's going on out there. It's about what people will do when they're really scared and they're trapped. And I just think it's amazing. I mean, yes, of course, the endings, and I say endings because the ending of the novella is aggravating, and the ending of the movie is kick in the face incredible. And they're just both amazing to me. I love them both. I have a soft spot for 1994's The Stand. I know there are definite problems with it. You know, when you have a book that is such an opus, you're not going to be able to adapt that properly. I don't care what you do. There's always going to be problems. It's just too much. It's an entire world in those pages, and you can't adapt that properly. But I remember, you know, all four nights of that. I remember being annoyed that it was Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. I'm like, what the hell, Wednesday? I'm sitting here. Give me an extra episode. I loved Randall Flagg. I loved Mother Abigail. I mean, any Stephen King fan tells you, you know, like his best works are The Stand or The Shining for the most part. People who don't say The Collective of the Dark Tower, but far as an individual standalone book. And my God, like I remember making jokes during the pandemic because I don't think I got COVID for the first time until clear into like 2021. And I remember walking around making jokes that I'm like, you know, I'm going to start seeing a black woman in my brain soon. And I'm going to have to start walking to Nebraska soon because everybody else was getting sick and I hadn't. And I'm like, what am I? One of the special ones?
Lisa, we all know you're one of the special ones.
In very different kinds of categories, because I definitely did get it eventually. And it, you know, it is what it is. But I think The Stand is just so incredible. I love Trash Can Man. I mean, find me anybody who's read that book and has seen that adaptation and doesn't adore Trash Can Man. It's just one of those, I don't know.
The cast
is
amazing.
Yes. You do have a couple of missteps, you know, like Molly Ringwald isn't the best Franny, but I mean, I think that they did a really good job. Bill Fagerbakker, and you know, even Rob Lowe did a great job, and it just Gary Sinise. You can't.
I also love seeing Ray Walston in it.
Yes, I mean, this is what I'm saying. Like, there's so much greatness to that version. The newer version, it's okay.
I didn't like it.
Not terrible. I do like that they did kind of a better job with like Vegas, and I do, you know what, any Skarsgård you give me, I'm going to say thank you, may I have some more, please. But it definitely isn't the 94 version. Right. And then I think my top of the heap is Pet Sematary, because that book is out of control good. That 1989, to make sure we're clear, version is incredible. And it's just funny to be a cat owner and listening to that book again. Like, I read it hard copy when I first read it, and they released an audiobook version narrated by Michael C. Hall. So I'm like, well, I'm reading this again. Let's go. I want to hear Michael C. Hall narrate this. And he does a great job. But all of the things that like Back from the Dead Church does to torment him, and I'm in the car going, oh, church, like it's a sitcom, like there's something wrong with me. It's like, you know, this cat tries to kill me, and I'm like, oh, church. It's like a stupid like tagline. But I mean, my God, like Fred Gwynn in that film, you know, like Judd, how do you not just love the heck out of these characters? And you know, Gage Creed, my godson, one day was laughing in the background when I was on the phone with my friend. And I was like, dude, you got Gage Creed running around your house. And she didn't know what I was talking about because she's a normal person. But that giggle never goes away. And so I just think that version, that adaptation was absolutely incredible. And if you'll allow me one more quick honorable mention. One of my favorite Stephen King novels is Needful Things. I don't know why more people don't carry on about this book, but the movie is good. It's not amazing. Max von Sydow, yes. Thank you very much. Oh, you will not get a better Leland Gaunt. Arguably better casting for Leland Gaunt than Morgan Freeman as Red. But the movie is, you know, it's fun.
Have you seen the unedited, the director's cut of it, which is like 3 hours?
I don't know. I wonder. I have to go check the DVD version I have. I haven't watched it in a while, but now I'm going to seek that out.
That one is better than the cut version of it.
Okay. The characters are great, but I felt that like it was a good movie that I enjoy, but it's not one I like say, "Ooh, you should watch this."
Exactly.
You know.
When I think of Needful Things, I tell people you should be reading the book.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I loved it. I love the book. That's a great book. I'm actually shocked that you don't have, you know, Shawshank or Stand By Me on this list. But you have a great.
Not my tops. I need the dark and scary.
Okay, fair enough.
We do suffering and misery here. We don't do these uplifting things. There's only a couple of those. I will say, in my defense, though, I championed Stand By Me to Movie of the Month for the Lambcast in the summer. So I did at least get that.
And that was 4 years ago. I remember I was on my way to Stephen King's house when I was listening to that. Yes.
Oh, cool.
It really was. All right. So now we will play the first of two daily games. This is a game called Name That Book Adaptation. And it's not only Stephen King.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to tell you the original name of the book and the year the movie came out, and you have to try and guess what the movie is. Okay. All right, let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Where will it stop? Okay. The original name is All You Need Is Kill, and the movie came out in 2014.
All You Need is Kill. I've seen
this. I'm sure you have. Again, that's the name of the novel, but yeah.
And you said 2014?
Yes.
I don't know.
I will first give you the name of the director. Maybe that'll help. When I give you the name of the actor, you might guess it right
probably
away.
Probably.
So we'll first go with the director is Doug Liman.
No. All I can tell you is he directed Swingers.
Okay. And it stars Tom Cruise.
And it's 2014?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know. He's got so many random action movies in there that I didn't see.
Okay. It's called Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, okay. I did see that.
Which is also killed. There's another name for it. I think it's, was it Death Kill Again or Reboot or something?
Oh, like that. Yeah. That one. I do remember that now. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And now we will play the second daily game, which is called High Low.
Okay.
And the idea here is that the Shawshank Redemption has a 9.3 IMDb rating, which is obviously the highest that you can get to, since it is number one still. And it has a 91% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Who the hell is that 9%? Who are those people?
Apparently. So you now will randomly get the name of a movie that was nominated for Best Picture since 1950, I believe I went back to.
Okay.
Yeah, the list goes all the way back to 1950, and you're going to get three of these. And you have to try and guess the IMDb rating of the movie and the Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, so you want actual numbers from me?
Of course I do.
Well, you said high or low. I thought I was just going to guess whether it was higher or lower.
Well, obviously, one second. With Shawshank, it's obviously going to be lower.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping you didn't notice.
No, I know. And so let's spin the wheel for your first one, and let's see what you get. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, the 2012 adaptation of Les Misérables.
Ew. Which one am I doing first?
You can tell me the IMDb approval rating or Rotten Tomatoes, whichever one you prefer.
Do I have to be accurate? Like, I have to get the number? So I'm feeling
you want to get as close as possible.
I feel like Les Misérables is probably in the 70s with Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, and you were correct. It is 70. So there you go.
Oh, it's exactly 70?
Exactly 70.
Ooh, well, you're kind giving me that one. I appreciate that. I'm going to put it at 7.3 on IMDb?
Ooh, very close. 7.5.
Okay.
7.5. Okay, fair.
I feel okay about
Let's,
that.
There you go. Let's spin the wheel for your next one. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Les Mis, and I think those numbers are way too low. But
it bores me. It bores me. I saw the stage show, and I was so bored. I can't. I just can't. I've never seen the movie. I've never seen that version of the movie, any versions. Of, no. I wanted to see Anne Hathaway sing I Dreamed a Dream. Yep. I watched that on YouTube, and that's all I've seen, and I don't need to see anything else. Sorry.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I recently actually just saw a French movie called Jean Valjean, which basically it's an adaptation that just tells the story of what happens to him at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you know, where he meets up with the priest and stuff like that. And it was actually much better than I thought.
Nice.
I thought there wouldn't be any meat there, but it was pretty good. Yeah. It wasn't great, but it was, you know, it gives you more of an idea as to what was happening during that segment, I guess you can say, of the story.
Fair enough.
Okay. So your second one is the 2006 Clint Eastwood directed movie Letters from Iwo Jima.
I think that one's in the 70s too. 70.
No, that one's 91.
Stop. It's a 91.
Yes. That's wow. a 91.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go with like an 8.4 on IMDb.
7.8.
All right. Fine.
7.8. Yeah. Again, I think that 7.8 should be higher.
Yeah.
Okay. And now let's spin the wheel for your final one today.
90 something. That's impressive.
Okay. The 1998 Oscar winning movie that shouldn't have won, Shakespeare in Love.
I agree. It shouldn't have won.
And you don't like Saving Private Ryan.
So
I don't know.
Unless
you think something else should have won.
To be fair, I don't dislike Saving Private Ryan. I'm not a big war movie person, but I definitely recognize that film should have won over Shakespeare in Love. I mean, I'm an English teacher, and I'm saying that. So no.
No, I really enjoy Shakespeare in Love also. I just don't think it's better than
Saving Private Ryan. No, it should have been Saving Private Ryan. Absolutely. 67%.
92.
Get the hell out of here. You're just making that up.
I'm not, but apparently the Weinsteins you know, paid a lot of people for their reviews also.
Get out. 7.2 on IMDb.
Oh, so close. 7.1.
All right.
Very good, very good. Very good. My favorite piece of trivia about Shakespeare in Love, and I've said this before, but I'm sure you have not heard it, is that there Weinstein got into a really big fight with one of the other producers. I'm trying to remember the producer's name. I always forget his name. And what he decided to do is when he puts his producing credit on screen, it's when there's a pile of shit on the ground.
That's great. I'll take that.
Yeah, I'm 100% sure that that was not appreciated.
I love it, and I don't care. Screw you, dude. I'm with you.
Now I have to actually look up to see who that producer is.
Amazing. Wait, so Weinstein put this guy's name with the pile of shit, or this guy put Weinstein's name?
No.
Oh.
He put Edward. If you watch and you see Edward Zwick's.
Oh, I credit. Thought he put Weinstein's name on the Oh, never mind.
No. Weinstein put Edward Zwick's
Hey. Credit. All right. Well, no, never mind.
Yeah.
Weinstein is a waste.
All right. All right. So, Lisa, would you like to tell everyone where they can find you while you're on sabbatical?
You can find me hibernating in the air conditioning, playing a lot of Stardew Valley and reading things that don't have to do with grad school. But if you want to hear some back episodes from me, you can check out Rabbit Holy Toledo, Toy Boat, rabbitholepodcasts.com. I am part of that network. I have been on a number of different shows there. And pretty much no matter what you're looking for, if you're looking for music, you're looking for movies, you're looking for TV, you're looking for people just yapping, we have all kinds of episodes and shows for you. And yeah, you can also catch me sporadically on other people's podcasts, like Rob's podcasts and the Lambcast, which I will show up every now and then. My most recent appearance there was for Mortal Kombat 2. So there's a lot of nerding out happening on that episode, let me tell you.
Why not? Why not?
A lot of real educated people getting very excited for a silly video game sequel.
Yeah, there are people that that caters to also.
Yes, like me.
Apparently. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. So, until tomorrow, get busy living.
Or get busy dying.